This talk was recorded by Insight Meditation South Bay. For more talks and information, visit www.imsb.org.
I was running around yesterday, having lost my car. I had to take it to the repair shop, and they told me it was serious. And I was in such a whirl and a dizzy, uneasy, unhappy, etc. place. And it suddenly struck me what I was going to be talking about tonight. I thought, this is perfect. So this is the four abodes, these wonderful places in which we can place our mind as we develop our mind, as we work on ourself, are very beautiful. In fact, this one is called, they are called the highest emotions and the divine abodes and sublime expressions of love, and all of those things sound so wonderful, almost blissful. And they are loving kindness, compassion, heavens, and equanimity. We all long for peace. We long, and we have some sense that there is peace somewhere. And not the peace of a moment, but something deeper than that. And not out there somewhere that we could go and find, like a pretty lake, but in here somewhere. Somewhere in ourself is a peaceful place. There are two stories I want to share with you. One is a Zen story. When I first heard it, I had terrible difficulty with it because you will see. Once upon a time, there was a famous Zen master who lived in a little temple in a fishing village. This is true, this far, because there is a little fishing village and a wonderful little temple, and this is a very famous teacher, Hakuin Zenji, who was minding his own business when the parents of a young girl who had got herself pregnant by one of the fishermen and who told the parents that the priest was the father came marching up the hill to the temple with the baby in their arms and said, "You made this baby, now take care of it. It's yours." And he said, "Oh, is that so?" And he took the baby. And he raised the baby, and the baby became part of the village. And finally, the girl and her lover couldn't stand it anymore, and they wanted their baby back, of course, and so they confessed. And so they came marching up the hill to the temple and said to the Zenji, "Can we have our baby back?" He said, "Oh, is that so? Here." He gave it back. I had all kinds of mixed feelings about, you know, handing babies around like that, and what an uncertain kind of future you're giving to some. But it's the is that so part that equanimity is about. It's just seeing a situation, being offered a situation, which we are over and over all day long. And accepting it and allowing it. We say in Zen it's kind of a come down, because usually we have sort of higher ambitions for ourselves. We want to look a little better and act a little better, and to just humbly say yes is a very, very different matter. And although it seems like it's giving up, it's actually coming to the peaceful place of not wanting too much, not clutching at things. We get so attached. That's how our mind works. We're made that way, to get to come into the world and then just want things or not want things. That's both the same kind of attitude, this quick thought that grabs. The other story is a Vipassana story. It's from Jack Kornfield, and maybe some of you have heard it. In his early days as a young monk in, I think it was in Burma, somewhere out there, he decided he needed a real retreat, and he was going to do it all by himself, and he hired a little cottage far, far up in the mountains. And he went there with high, high expectations about what he was going to accomplish in his 2 weeks of living by himself in this little cottage. And he woke up the first morning at 4 o'clock in the morning to loud music coming from down the hill where a Boy Scout camp was set up for the whole summer. And they played Bollywood music starting at 4 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night. And it drove him crazy. He said the first week it was unbearable. He went down there and he tried to bribe them. He begged them. He tried everything in his power to make it stop. And it wouldn't stop. And finally, he realized he could say yes to it and just let it be part of the whole thing that was happening. And then he had a very fine retreat. I've always thought that was a wonderful example of how this works. We don't like it very much because we think, and we think too much. You know, we really do think too much and try to figure it all out when the truth is so simple. Just let it be. And then things are more clear. And once things are clear, then we know how to adjust to them. Otherwise, we're up against it all the time. And most of our stress comes from that being up against things. Trying to cope with it, trying to manage it, how to deal with it, instead of taking it in. So this equanimity is a very serious matter. It's probably the most serious way of expressing this whole thing of the Brahma Viharas. They can't really operate as compassion and loving kindness if you aren't truly calm and quiet and loving. Otherwise, it's just a facade. So it requires real humility, not being special, not presenting oneself in any way, but just adjusting to whatever the situation is. And sometimes looking like a total idiot and being okay with that. It's hard. It's hard, but it's authentic. And this whole Brahma Vihara is about authenticity. This is our real self. If we have a self, and of course this is about what is the self? Is the self the great me that is putting on a show as we walk through the world? Or is the self something more humble and more simple and more truly compassionate and loving. So the question is, what do we do? How do we manage this in such a stressful world, in such a crazy, really does feel like a crazy place we're living in a lot of times. How do we manage to cultivate this? My teacher always said, well, it seems there's always time to just sit down. Just for a little while, sit down. And that starts to make all the difference. The more we try to figure it out, the more we run around, the more books we read, the more movies we watch, none of that is going to tell us what we need to know. The only place where authentic information lies is in here, in you. Your wisdom, your life. So our meditation practice is this enormous gift that we have, that we're actually, in spite of all our idiocy and our mistakes and all the things that make us these very strange critters, that there is something of us that's running through us, running through life itself, that brings us to sit and to find how at one we are with everything. There is nothing that is not connected. You can't imagine any disconnected thing. There is no such thing. Chair to the floor, to the ta-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's huge. And yet, it's us. And so in one sense, we feel very much alone, and we are, and it's difficult because we are separate. We were born to separate from our moms, which must have been painful and difficult just to start, and it's going to be probably pretty painful and difficult to leave this world again, all by ourselves. So we have that to face. That's part of the real truth of our life. And it's very helpful to be able to look it straight in the eye and know it for what it is. Because believe it or not, it makes life so sweet. It doesn't last very long. But while it's happening, it's amazing. And it's sitting in meditation, realizing, making real that insight about the sweetness and the goodness of life, and how in ourself life is a fire that's burning. So they say, Buddha said, whatever has the nature to arise will also pass away. So this is one of the basic truths. No self, everything connected, and everything falling apart. Falling apart, falling apart. And then coming back again in some new form. So it's a huge matrix of vital activity going on. It never stops. It's just like our mind when we sit. It just goes. We don't know where the thoughts come from, really. They're just there. We think they're my thoughts. Oh, yes, and I had this great idea. Well, where did it come from? I don't know. I don't know where these words are coming from out of my mouth right now. And that's true for all of us. We think we're in control. We think we know what we're doing. And in some sense, of course we do, because we totally trust this. And in trusting it, we can do it. We can give it away, which is really what we do. And in giving it away, we experience the Brahma Viharas. The experience that seems so distant and so lovely and so out there is right here, whenever we're able to give it away. So one of the things we need to accept very strongly is that what we think about ourselves is different every moment, and that we don't need to build up a fancy self and then protect it, because it's all fake. We're much more interesting and real and alive if we're honest about ourselves, our mistakes, our inadequacies, as well as our brilliance, because we're all brilliant too. But to have confidence means to have faith, confidence, fidelity, to be faithful to ourself and trust it. And that itself is an equanimous activity.